Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
What up, world? Welcome on and all to another episode of The Ocho, presented to you in partnership, as always, with SB Nation's blog on theboys.com. My name, RG Ocho. You know me, of course, from BTB and from right here as your humble host on The Ocho. It is our episode for Friday, January 17th, 2020. Welcome to Friday. You've been working for the weekend. You're just about there. Congratulations to you. We have a very special episode in store for you today, NFL Films. Filmmaker extraordinaire Chris Weaver stopped by. We had a fantastic chat. Before we get there, though, a few things to get to. We got a bit of a Thursday news dump. Not really news, but a little dump of sorts from the Cowboys. Mike McCarthy, new Dallas Cowboys head coach, met with the print media in the DFW area to give a few updates. So we're going to roll through these. And this first one, you'll hear Chris and I kind of talk about this at the end of our conversation. So we recorded earlier on Thursday before this was known, but Kellen Moore will be calling the plays for the Dallas Cowboys offense in 2020. That is a very, very, very big piece of news. Continuity for the Cowboys offense is a really great thing. So certainly exciting to hear that Kellen Moore is going to be calling the plays. Number two, the Cowboys will be staying in a base 4-3 defense. There had been some thought. I know we played the Will McClay interview earlier this week that the Cowboys could switch to a 3-4 under Mike Nolan. No need to worry. The 4-3 is here to stay. A new name is on the Cowboys defensive coaching staff, though. Cowboys have loved to have former players on their staff. They have another one. This one, not a former Dallas Cowboy, but a former Green Bay Packer. Former player under Mike McCarthy, Al Harris. Oh, yeah, you might remember Al Harris. You've been watching football a while. Will be helping the Cowboys secondary, joining as an assistant in the secondary. I know my dad likes Al Harris, actually. Played his college football at Texas A&M Kingsville, what was formerly known as Texas A&I University. A couple more things to get to. Number four, I think. Mike McCarthy has spoken to Dak Prescott, appropriately for number four. There was some, we talked about a little bit of, nervousness because they hadn't spoken yet, but Mike McCarthy has spoken, so that's good to know. Next thing on the menu, if you listen to the Ocho and all of the Blog on the Boys podcasts, we have our own draft-related podcast, Talking the Draft with Connor Livesey and Dalton Miller, and there's also the great draft show from the mothership at DallasCowboys.com, and everybody's getting ready for the Senior Bowl. And the Cowboys coaching staff will not be there, Mike McCarthy said. There's too much for them to do at the Star in Frisco, so I'm not worried about this. I don't think you should be. The Cowboys scouting department, they're the ones that need to be there, and that's the most important thing. Just so you're aware. Finally, though, final update, if you want to call it that, there is no real update on Jason Witten. Mike McCarthy apparently had a great conversation with Jason Witten, and the future is TBD. So who knows what the situation is going to be with Jason Witten as the future unfolds. But let's, now that you're caught up, let's get to our special guest, Chris Weaver of NFL Films. Stop by. We get into the Hall of Fame, Steve Sable, Jimmy Johnson, Cliff Harris. All of it's a conversation that I think you're very much going to enjoy. Here he is from NFL Films, Chris Weaver, right here on The Ocho. Pleased to be joined now by a very good friend of mine and what I know is your best friend in this entire universe, filmmaker extraordinaire, the one, the only. He got me to love hockey, Chris Weaver of NFL Films. Chris, how goes it?
Very good, very good. As you know, it's been a good week here at NFL Films for us. So I'm doing very well today.
You know that I am a huge fan of NFL Films, located at One Sable Way. It was incredible when Mr. Sable, Ed Sable, got into the Hall of Fame, and as you mentioned this week, Steve Sable getting in. I have to imagine spirits are incredibly high in Mount Laurel right now.
Absolutely. You know, we were told that, you know, we knew he was on the list of finalists, and our company president, Ross Kettover, said, you know, we're going to go to the theater and try to, you know, put out some good vibes and hopefully he'll get in. And so when he did, you know, the room exploded. There's now footage in the world that people can see. I think I might have even retweeted it. So we were extremely happy, and it's definitely given us a boost going into the home stretch here of this 100th season.
On the episode, we talked about the Cowboys getting in, and we'll get into that in a second. I noted, you know, that my favorite inductee from this class and the Centennial class specifically is Steve Sabol. For those unaware, can you explain what Mr. Sabol means to you and means to NFL films and means to the NFL as a whole?
Well, you know, to me personally, I it's one of those things that's really even hard to describe. I've been here for now 18 years, maybe more, and it's about the only job I've really ever had. I mean, it's since odd jobs in high school. So, you know, growing up watching NFL films and knowing about NFL films and Steve himself, it was truly, I don't even want to say it was a dream job, because it was something I never even really thought could be possible. So to be able to come here, you know, in 2002 and still be here and love almost every single minute of it is all because of Steve. So on a personal level, there's that. Like, I can't, it's one of those things, there's nothing I can say to really put to do it justice, because, you know, he's it's provided me with a living and a way to support my family and do something I love every day. And to me, that's the goal of life. If you can have a job that you love, that's about as good as it gets. So personally, I'm over the moon, you know, thinking about him and seeing him get into the Hall of Fame. And in terms of what he's done for films and football, you know, somebody, a friend of mine said yesterday, it's not even the people that he's touched directly at films that are now, you know, a lot of people here have gone on to do other things in the world, and they've taken his sort of spirit, Steve's spirit and style and all that and all that with them. But I hear from people that don't work here all the time and talk, like you, you know, that talk about how big a fan they were of what he did personally and what he created here at NFL Films. So he's touched a lot of lives, and it's really hard to put into words. But, you know, on a personal level, it means a lot to me. And in a professional level, you know, he changed the way people watch football, and it's, we still see that on the screen today, whether it's our stuff or even broadcasts or other filmmakers who produce sports content.
I don't know if I've ever told you this story, Chris, but I think it was now maybe 7 years ago. It was one April, I remember, because the Masters was coming up. My dad gave me, I believe it was Super Bowls 1 through 46, and it was just kind of little breakdowns of them, not the games, you know, on DVD or anything, but it was this awesome box set. And when he gave it to me, I was kind of overwhelmed. And I just told my dad, you know, because it was kind of wrapped, I said, you know, before I open this, I just, you know, I want to just kind of take a moment, because without Steve Sabol, this wouldn't be possible to literally be holding this physical gift. And I opened it, and it was in this sort of sleeve, and that's kind of the way the box is presented. When I slid it out and opened the sort of pamphlet book thing, there's a letter kind of addressed to whoever, you know, owns this thing from Steve Sabol. And it was, you know, I thought it was really cool in a way. I feel like that's what Steve did. Was he thought of everything, and he thought of the things you would think of, and he thought of a way to address that. And I think that's evident in everything you guys do.
Well, you know, his spirit truly lives on here, and it's not uncommon for somebody to sort of say, you know, this is probably what Steve would like, or, you know, Steve wouldn't want us to do it that way, or he'd really like us to change this or that. So his spirit still lives on here, and it will forever. And just one more thing about this, you know, I talked about how people outside of the building that he sort of influenced and touched, you know, and they did a Football Life on Steve, and I think they re-aired it last night. Mm-hmm. And one of the things they did in that film was they had people who wrote letters to Steve that had nothing to do with the NFL or NFL football beyond being fans of it. And those letters, man, I tell you, we watched that. We had like a memorial service after Steve passed away at the Kimmel Center, which is a beautiful concert hall in Philadelphia. And that was one of those things that when people read those letters and I saw it in the film, I was just truly blown away. And it was another, you know, one of those underscoring moments where he was even a bigger influence than I had even understood him to be. So I can't, like I said, can't say enough good stuff about Steve Sabol. We're all totally thrilled that he's going to be in the Hall of Fame, and I'm certain he would be excited about it.
Well, I'm very excited to see the features you guys are going to produce on all the Hall of Famers. I'd be lying if I said I wasn't a little bit more excited about what you'll come up with for Steve. But I'm sure you're excited to get to work on some Cowboys-related Hall of Fame, you know, films. You know, you've talked before, you're sort of heyday as a Cowboys fan came in the Jimmy Johnson era. I mean, I have to imagine, you know, you were an impressionable age and to experience that. I'm only 30, and so, you know, that sort of predates my impressionable age. But what was it like for you? I have to imagine, as a Cowboys fan, it was emotional for you to see Jimmy Johnson find out, and the way he found out, and the Troy element of it all. What was Sunday like for you?
No, I did happen to catch it live. You know, I'm not always watching halftime of a game, or I'm often covering games, so I don't get to see it. But this is one where I was on the couch still, and you know, you see David Baker go in the room, and David Baker is sort of the face of the Hall of Fame in a certain way now. And having already seen it happen with Cowher, I immediately, you know, the wheels started turning, and I got really excited. And you know, I wouldn't say I was surprised. It's just one of those things. I was never sure if Jimmy was going to get in or not, and this was certainly a great opportunity for that to happen. And so seeing Jimmy, I was absolutely thrilled. And then he got emotional. And so I got a touch emotional. And then them filming Aikman in the booth was brilliant. And yeah, the whole thing, it certainly takes me back to my child. I was 12 years old when they won that first Super Bowl with Jimmy. So that was definitely the impressionable age. And, you know, seeing him do it again the next year, and I have vivid memories of those days, and I remember him being hired and Landry being fired and then Jimmy retiring. I remember all those things quite well. So yeah, that's a piece of childhood, and those are the days that that are easy to remember as a kid loving your sports team. So very excited for Jimmy. I can't wait to see him I'm sure he'll give a great speech, and he well deserved, if I may say so.
It's often said that when it comes to determining whether somebody should be a Hall of Famer, you know, the kind of rubric question is, could you tell the story of the NFL without them? And I think that's a unique question for you, given that you tell stories, to your point, for a living. What part of the NFL story would Jimmy encompass to you?
Well, I think the thing that can't be overlooked is he was really the architect of that dynasty, and he covered. Let me put it to you this way: I know a guy that was on the blue ribbon panel in the room, and he didn't speak to this in the room per se, but his opinion was to me, Jimmy was a coach that sort of covered all three sides of the ball, meaning he knew what talent he wanted on all three sides of the ball and helped put that in place, as opposed to some coaches who sort of are focused on one side of the ball and don't necessarily. We don't necessarily have evidence that they did a great job on the other side of the ball. So Jimmy, as an architect and as an eye for talent and how to put people in the right places, is, I think, you know, I don't know what makes a great NFL coach, but my opinion is, I think what makes the best coach is like the Belichick model, knowing what guys, knowing how to get the best out of whatever guys you have, and then finding the best people to fit in the spots. To me, that's probably the most important job of an NFL coach. If I had to, you know, again, I'm kind of guessing and projecting a little bit here, but Jimmy was really good at that, and I think we can call it fact that they don't win those three Super Bowls without Jimmy Johnson building that team. And, you know, of course he wasn't there for the third one, but he certainly had his fingerprints on that team that won it in 95.
Chris, I'd be lying to you if I said that you were the person I was most excited to talk to about the Jimmy news. I was, you know, my dad was number one. I was really excited just to kind of, you know, kick back some memories and stuff, but you were definitely number two. And something in talking to my dad about, that I think I knew but hadn't ever really verbalized. So much of the Hall of Fame, I think, is about characters. And not that that goes into it, but I mean, it certainly helps if you were this kind of character role in your NFL career. And unlike the coaches before him that were incredibly stoic, I think you look at every successful coach that predates Jimmy in NFL history, you know, you've got your Chuck Noll, your Bill Walsh, your Tom Landry, these kind of quiet conservative guys. Jimmy came in and was this character. I mean, this complete opposite end of the spectrum. Do you think that kind of galvanized the Cowboys lore, the how about them Cowboys, the silver hair, the bravado? I mean, do you think that mantra, that personality bled into his team and his style overall?
I do think that he sort of had an attitude that he projected onto the team. And my memory is that If you talk to the guys of that era, the Aikmans, the Emmitts, and those guys, that Jimmy, in addition to just this sort of, he had a little swagger, I guess is the word that right. People now use. Like, he walked in and he, you know, we have a famous bite of him in the 90, I think it was the 1990 minicamp preseason, where the interviewer asked him, you know, what is it a failure if this team doesn't make the playoffs?
Right.
And Jimmy just says, oh, we're going to make the playoffs. You know, like he had the guts to say those sort of things. And of course, in 93, the 93 NFC championship, when he guaranteed they were going to beat San Francisco, you know, he had some swagger and he had some style that I do think he projected on the team. But I think the number one thing that he really instilled in those guys and those teams was the fear of losing. You know, it wasn't even the drive of winning. It was more like they all say that if you lost, Jimmy made it so miserable, and not just like by beating the hell out of you, but just the mindset that you should feel miserable when you lose. That the fear of losing was a big motivator for Jimmy personally, and he put that on the team. And that's the thing that I sort of think of most when I think of Jimmy Johnson.
Hey guys, going to get back to our conversation with Chris Weaver of NFL Films in just a minute. But before we do, going to take a very quick break to hear a word from our sponsors.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prof G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Kara Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prof G Pod, we bring you insights from blue flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. And not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds four times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
All right, everybody, welcome back. Let's get back to it. Here he is from NFL Films, Chris Weaver. You mentioned the clip, and I can see that moment in my mind. I don't know if it was shot at, I assume it was shot at St. Edwards in Austin. And you're right, he's just kind of matter of fact, like, yeah, there's no if, you know, we're going to be in. But what's your favorite football movie that features Jimmy? Is it the A Football Life on him? I think that was the first season of A Football Life. I could be wrong.
It was very early. Yeah, first or second. You know, I'm not sure about my favorite movie, but what I do know is he's got a couple less, you know, How About Them Cowboys is obviously the hallmark Jimmy Johnson bite, but he's got a couple sort of under the radar bites, locker room bites. There's one where I'm trying to remember if it was after they beat Philadelphia in the playoffs, but he goes in the locker room and he says, if you ever go after a big gorilla,
right,
you don't hit him lightly. You hit him with everything you got. And me and one of my cowboy buddies at work, we say that like constantly. It's like one of those things that we still bring up all the time. And that's one of my favorites. And I also love the bite when they beat San Francisco in 92 in San Francisco, well, the 92 season, when he says, you know, you are one game away from the Super Bowl. I always thought that was so cool, man, when he was like talking about, or I guess that was the week before against Philadelphia when they had to go to San Francisco. Mm-hmm. I always thought that was such a cool bite. And I use that in script all the time. Like, you know, I just wrote a script this week about Andy Reid, about how he's now just two wins away from winning his first Lombardi. And I always reflect on Jimmy in those sort of hidden sound bites when people bring up his How About Them Cowboys. But the Football Life film, by the way, is tremendous. It's a really good film that Bennett Visseltier, a producer here, produced. And he's actually grew up out here in the Philadelphia area, but is a lifelong Cowboys fan as well.
Do you think watching Jimmy Johnson and this sort of character trait molded you as a filmmaker? I mean, because not everybody, you know, watched him as intently as you did growing up. I have to imagine that had some impact on you.
Well, that's a good question. I'm not sure. I'm not real sure how to answer it, except to say that, you know, the swagger and the attitude we just talked about, and those sound bites, like he gave you something to work with. You know what I mean? And so you don't always get that. And that's to your earlier point about being a character and how that can sort of help influence people's perspective of you and even your how they look back on your career. And so I'm not sure how he influenced me as a filmmaker, but he certainly influenced me as a football fan and as a Cowboys fan.
You've worked with a lot of 90s era Cowboys on different projects. Can you see, you know, in fingerprints of Jimmy even still when you work on things? And I imagine as you'll work on, I don't know that there's an NFL Films product called How About Them Cowboys, but if you haven't written it down, that needs to be the name of the Jimmy Johnson feature that you work on this spring.
Well, I think in terms of how you know, those guys, those players that he worked with and touched, I think, you know, Irvin and Aikman both tweeted this weekend about how long their relationship goes back with Jimmy. So I think they unquestionably, you know, he shaped those guys. He met Michael Irvin when he was like a 17-year-old kid, and the same with Aikman when he was recruiting him for Oklahoma State. But those guys undoubtedly were shaped by Jimmy Johnson, and I love the tributes that they paid to him on social media, you know, and just reminding people of how much influence he did have on their lives.
That's part of, or one of my favorite parts of the, I think, 92 America's game, when Troy talks about how Jimmy recruited him when he went to Oklahoma, and then when he transferred to UCLA, and you know, then he talked about getting drafted. He's like, well, this point, I don't have a choice. You know, I mean, I'm kind of stuck with him, you know, by being drafted. The other Cowboys Hall of Famer, and, you know, this predates you, certainly, Cliff Harris, Captain Crash. What were your thoughts? I mean, you know, got to be awesome for you.
No, it's any Cowboy that gets in, I'm always excited about it. He's one of those guys that sort of flies under the radar these days because he wasn't as, you know, outspoken, and we don't, and you know, not as interviewed as much as, say, like a Charlie Waters on that defense. So I think he's sort of a hidden gem in that defense. But he was a physical player and a very good player, and I know he's one of those guys that Gil Brandt has been putting, you know, for a long time about how great a football player he was. So it's really cool to see him get in. I'm very happy for him. You know, not to turn negative here, I'm really bummed that Drew Pearson didn't get in. So there's still some guys. I know Harvey Martin's another guy that I think deserves to get in. Chuck Howley. So there's still some guys I hope can get in. But look, anytime they get in, that's a good thing. And I think Cliff Harris deserves to get in.
Somebody who I think molded my opinion on the Chuck Howley thing. I know he was on the Blue Ribbon panel. I don't want you to reveal who it was, but Elliot Harrison from NFL.com was the first guy that kind of, reading him a long time ago, really opened my eyes to Chuck Howley. I have two questions on the Drew Pearson thing. One is, do you think he, I mean, what is he missing? I mean, if you had to objectively come up with something, because I do think the character thing or the novelty thing, whatever you want to call it, I mean, he has signature moments, you know, and he played for the Cowboys. I mean, he has the Hail Mary. He's got, you know, he checks off every relevant and irrelevant box, if that makes sense.
No, I think to answer your question, I don't know. I really, the only thing I can think of is his numbers. When you pull them up, they aren't staggering. And of that era, obviously, not very many players were staggering. Mm-hmm. So receivers, at least. So, but if you compare him to players of that era, he sort of lines up with being where, you know, a good player. But, you know, I think it's Dan Daly from Washington, D.C. He said it years ago in an interview he did with us. Like, if you watched Drew Pearson play, like, live during his playing days, he was undoubtedly a Hall of Famer. Like, he just looked like a Hall of Famer out there. And to your point, he's got big moments. He's got personality. He's got a championship. He contributed in the playoffs. So he's got everything I think that a player needs to get in. And, you know, he was a three-time All-Pro, you know, and I'm not trying to talk, you know, I don't want to talk anybody out of people that should be in the Hall of Fame. Like, right. Carmichael got in, and he didn't have it. He had no All-Pros. I mean, he led the league in receiving 1 year, catches and yards. So he had a good career. I'm not trying to bury Carmichael, but he didn't have three All-Pros. He didn't win a Super Bowl, you know. So Drew Pearson, it broke my heart a little bit to see that footage of him at home, you know, because he clearly thought he was going to get in, and that's why he had cameras there to do it. And I worked with him just last year for Peyton's Places, and he was great with us. So I think he's going to get in eventually. I hope it's sooner than later. I hope it's sooner than later because he certainly deserves it.
You're a pro, Chris, so you kind of set up my segue for me. This is more, I think, of a personal opinion, but what were your thoughts on the release of and the heavy release? It was everywhere. Of the footage of him not getting in. And I don't know if that tugs at you as a filmmaker, or, I mean, I'm curious for your thoughts, because it's obviously very difficult to watch.
I think that's a tough question to answer, because the way it sort of trickled out, the first couple bites came out, and I was like, man, this is heartbreaking. But as a filmmaker, I go, this is going to be a good element when he does get in. You know what I mean? And people
good
can
point.
Say, you know, this, you know, peaks and valleys are what make stories great. You know, I just had a conversation with somebody earlier about that. Like, you got to have these down moments to really shine a light on the great moments, right? And so that's the optimist in me, which is I wish was a bigger part of me. But you know, like I said, I think he's going to get in. So I, you know, that footage is going to be more valuable when he does. But you know, as it kept trickling out and more got out during the day, I was sort of like, God, I hope they quit putting, you know, more of it out there, because then it started to feel a little more like we were, like he was getting, you know, picked on a little bit or taken advantage of, or whatever the word is people want to use. So So I'm not like opposed to it per se, but you know, some of it, I kind of wish it wasn't out there, I guess is an easy way to put it.
Right. I saw Nui Scruggs from NBC in Dallas had a tweet that I hadn't thought about this angle to it, you know, because somebody, because you saw a lot of, you know, don't be sharing this, this is a low moment for him, et cetera. But he had a response where he said, well, I actually believe that this could help him get in. Do you buy that at all?
I mean, it's certainly possible. Anything is possible, but you know, I'm not in that room. I don't know why he didn't get in, so I don't know what, you know, what it will take. But I don't know if it'll help. But it, you know, you could argue it'll help him, RJ. But I guess you could argue it would hurt him. I really don't know. It's just one of those things that, in the end, it's out there now. So there's really not anything to debate. And you know, I don't know the behind the scenes on who shot that or what, why that was shot. But I know that he's wearing a microphone, which means somebody professional probably did it, and it was probably a news crew that he invited in. So it's not like somebody's taking advantage of him in that regard, you know. So, you know, it's a shame it unfolded that way, but that's sort of the dice roll, I guess, if you, when you don't know what's going to happen and you invite people in.
Sure. I want to get your thoughts on the final three games of the season, and I appreciate you taking the time. But before I do, I don't think I've ever asked you this question. I thought about it last night when I knew we were going to talk. I started the Aaron Hernandez documentary on Netflix, which is so powerful and so well done. Obviously, such a tragic story. What football movies have you been enjoying watching lately that may be NFL Films products or maybe not? I don't think I've ever asked you that.
I recently went through the, on Netflix, the QB1 series. I watched all three seasons of that during this football season. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Yes.
Where they follow high profile high school prospects coming in, you know, that are, they're either committed or about to commit to college.
And that's Peter Berg, right? That did that?
He's the executive producer behind it, I believe. I don't want to get his title wrong, but he is behind it. I don't know what his role is in it per se. Mm-hmm. But that show is what it really did was it broke my heart a little bit because we used to do these high school shows. We did one called the Best High School Rivalries or the Greatest High School Football Rivalries. And we did another show about high school football for about 2 or 3 years. And I absolutely love doing it. It's one of my favorite things I've ever produced and worked on here.
Did you work on 2 a days? Not to interrupt you. I just remembered that from when I was in high school.
No, I'm not familiar with that one, but I'm not familiar with that one. But the one we did
on
do
Hoover High, I think, in Alabama. That was,
No, I'll have to look into it because it's not a lot of them that fly under my radar. But the QB1 was really good. Like the it's usually about the characters, you know. And somebody was asking me how do they portray the kids. It's always, that's one of the things that's tricky about high school is one, I don't know how many people watch them. I think that's why those shows didn't sustain for us. And the producers that worked on them all loved it here, and our bosses love it. We wanted to keep doing them, but I just don't think there was a big enough market outside of the cities in which these teams play. So but that's why I'm curious how QB1 does. It must do okay because they did three seasons of it, and I don't think they would keep funding it and keep doing it if it was falling apart for them. So but that was a really interesting show. I'm trying to remember, you know, this was a couple years ago, the one about the JUCO. I'm trying to remember the name.
Oh, the Last Chance You show on Netflix.
Yes, I saw that first season. I haven't seen the most recent one, but that one was pretty good. And I feel like there's one I'm missing that I saw, and I can't think of what it was. But I do like QB1 in terms of the characters. You know, it's one of those things that I watch differently than I'll watch, you know, The Crown or Peaky Blinders because I do this for a living. So I sort of dissect it a little more, and there's actually some cinematographers, some freelancers that we use. So that was another reason I was interested in checking out. But I liked QB1. The Aaron Hernandez, I'm probably going to check that out. I just put it on my watch list too. So I haven't seen any of it, but I'll check it out at some point.
It's powerful. Do you watch the All or Nothings on non-football teams? Like I know they would do one on Man City. And I know they do it on like a rugby team. Do you watch those as well?
I've watched a handful of the rugby episodes. I'm interested in the Man City. I haven't done that. I'm like you. At least you were with hockey, and you might have done the same with soccer. I'm trying to sort of plug into that a little more, and I just picked a team a couple years ago. So I've been following a little bit, and I am interested in seeing the Man City. And then I got to go in London this year. I went to the Jacksonville game in London because we were doing a piece for the Grind show that I was working on.
Oh, that's right. You told us about that, huh?
Yeah, and Shad Khan was there, and we went, and I got to go visit Fulham Football Club, which was just really cool to go to one of those organizations and see. So, I'm definitely interested in checking out the All or Nothing Man City, and I have seen bits of the All or Nothing on the All Blacks, the rugby team.
Oh, right. Okay. I'm new.
Oh, the Michigan one, by the way.
Oh, that's right.
The Michigan one, we didn't shoot it and produce it, but we had our hands on it on the back end. That's a really good one. I mean, that's as candid and as intimate as any of them that I've seen. So I definitely recommend people checking that one out too.
Right. And that one, I think the first episode, the Harbaughs go there. That's when they were like in Rome, right? And they go to the Vatican.
Paris or somewhere. Yeah. I can't remember. That's right. That's right. They go to visit the Pope. That's right.
Right. Another great Netflix thing, The Two Popes. That was a great movie as well. Should put it on your list, but
it's on my list. It's there.
I'm new in soccer as well. Who's your team?
Arsenal. So it was sort of a random choice to a certain degree. I knew they had a connection to the NFL with ownership, and I have a couple buddies at work that are massive soccer nerds. They are have tattoos of their teams and everything. They're so into it. Mm-hmm. And so the one of them that I was with when I made this decision sort of gave me the background on Arsenal and sort of gave them a parallel to the American sports. Like, here's who I would compare them to. So as it lined up, I was like, all right, I'm choosing Arsenal. I like the their logo, their colors. I like the story, and I like that they have a connection to the NFL. So, but I just follow them loosely. I mean, I'm just looking at, I see the scores when they come out and kind of follow them that way, but I haven't seen a lot of them actually, you know, playing the games.
Interesting. I on the connection to the NFL, see, I chose the Dallas Cowboys of the soccer world and Manchester United. So, and to be fair, their like sleeve sponsor or whatever is Kohler, and my dad works for Kohler. So,
it's a layup.
Right, exactly. So the Aaron Hernandez thing is great. You'll love that. I mean, the story of it. The story is obviously tragic, but so with regards to these playoffs, what are you rooting for? Both Chris Weaver and then Chris Weaver, the NFL Films employee.
Well, as a filmmaker, I really have no rooting interest because everybody that's left, every team that's left has great stories and great characters, and they're good football teams, and that's a big part of it. So I have no rooting interest as a filmmaker. Personally, I'd like to see Aaron Rodgers go back, and so I'm pulling for Green Bay to see Aaron Rodgers get back to one and maybe win a second, and I'm pulling for Kansas City. I'd love to see Mahomes against Aaron Rodgers. So I guess maybe even as a filmmaker, but it wouldn't kill me if one of those teams didn't get in, but would love to see Rodgers Mahomes, and I'd love to see Rodgers either win a second one or Andy Reid win a first. I got a soft spot for Andy Reid, especially after he left Philly. It became easier to be a fan of his, and so I'm pulling for the Packers and the Chiefs, but I really I could care less if they didn't win, because I think Tennessee is a really good football team, and I like seeing them come out of nowhere a little bit, and the way they win, you know, running the ball and strong and stout defense, and the way they locked up Lamar last week was very impressive. So any way it goes, I'll be happy, but if I have my choice, I'd like to see Rodgers and Mahomes.
All right, guys, sometimes this is the case. We got to take another quick break to hear a word from our sponsors. Welcome back, everybody. Let's get back to the rest of the episode. Here it is, Chris Weaver of NFL Films on The Ocho. See, I think that's the filmmaker response too, though, because then you can use all the Super Bowl I footage. You know what I mean? Like, you can just marry the two. I think it was like 2 years ago, right, that you finally like aired that in full, not HD quality, but like the full game aired on NFL Network, if I remember that.
Yeah, I think it was lost, and then they finally found it a few years ago. And yeah, I think they just re-aired it in its entirety, and I think we sort of added stuff to it, so it wasn't just the broadcast that it was. Sort of, they may have aired the broadcast as it was, but we also did like sort of a longer 2-hour film out of it where it had every play, but we also mixed in our you know, the radio calls and our footage too. So, and speaking of, you know, going back, like I worked on this show called Championship Chase that airs on CBS before the games. And for this week, I was covering the Chiefs, and so I dipped into the Super Bowl IV, the Hank Stram wire. So, yeah, the Chiefs give us an opportunity to if they make the Super Bowl, to really lean on Hank Stram again, which was our first, you know, Super Bowl, putting a microphone on a guy, wiring a guy in the Super Bowl. So,
sure.
Can't go wrong with Hank Stram.
Matriculating the ball down the field, absolutely.
That's exactly right.
But so from a Cowboys perspective, you mentioned it became easier to root for Andy Reid when he left Philly. I think everyone agrees with you. But Niners, Packers, I mean, that's, you know, that's a conflict, you know, and so I'm curious, who do you, I mean, you've grown far more independent and objective than most people in the world, but deep down within you, your Cowboys fan Chris Weaver dislikes who more?
The Niners. That's still, but that's sort of a generational thing, I think, because I know that you know, they've had more trouble with the Packers the last few years, and it's been painful to a certain degree. But me growing up, the Niners were the team that you had to root against, especially because in my house, anytime the catch from, you know, the 81 NFC Championship came on, my dad would change the channel. It was like sacrilege for that to be on the television when we were watching it. So I grew up sort of in a household that didn't like the Niners, and, you know, that was the head-to-head matchup in those 90s years that we talked about earlier, and we had no trouble with the Packers at that point. But, you know, Brett Favre never won a game in Texas Stadium. So the modern pain of dealing with Green Bay in the playoffs doesn't, I guess it hasn't stuck with me the same way as the Niners in my childhood. But, you know, that Dez play, that's one that's never going to go away. You know, that's why I thought it was a brilliant question in McCarthy's presser when somebody asked him if Dez caught. I thought that was absolutely brilliant.
No, that'll be a great soundbite to lean on when the Cowboys win Super Bowl 55. You know what I mean? Like, you go back and you pull the McCarthy quote. The Niners thing is great, obviously, and that my first foray into NFL films was talking to, you know, Paul Camerata about A Tale of Two Cities, which was really awesome. I had never really thought about it until you said it and reminded me. Brett Favre never won at Texas Stadium. Aaron Rodgers never lost at AT&T Stadium. It's interesting how that baton was passed. Like,
is that right? I guess I either forgot or didn't know that. Yeah. I knew that he beat him in the playoffs, obviously.
Yeah, I knew both of those things, but I had never married the idea, which kind of takes me to my last question for you, Chris. Your thoughts on Mike McCarthy, because I think that's why a lot of Cowboys fans are rooting against the Packers as well, because if they win it, or at least appear in a Super Bowl in the first season without McCarthy, it kind of deflates, you know, bringing him in. What are your thoughts in terms of what he brings to the 2020 Cowboys and beyond?
I was very happy with the hire. Look, like I said earlier, I don't know really what makes a good NFL coach, because I think there's a number of ways to do it right and do it well. But I don't have strong opinions about who I want for coaches. You know, everybody always wants to fire their coach, and I'm always like, well, who do you want as your coach? It's not an easy thing to go find a great football coach. Mm-hmm. And so I usually have a longer list of guys I don't want. And so it's less about who do you want as your coach when people ask that. It's more like, oh, here's who I don't want. And so McCarthy was one that I was like, I like McCarthy. I like established guys. I'm sort of against these college guys that have never done anything in the pros, because the only precedent for a guy coming in with zero NFL experience and doing really well is Jimmy Johnson,
right,
the guy we already talked about. But nobody's done it since, really, at least not that I can think of. And when they try that, it usually falls very flat. And so I like McCarthy. I mean, his win percentage is really good. I think it's better than Jimmy Johnson's, by the way, who obviously just got in the Hall of Fame. His win percentage is really good. I like his demeanor, and I like that he stays nice and calm. You know, I've never been big on head coaches calling plays, like, no matter who it is. I just don't like them calling plays. I just think there's too many things to deal with, that it's too easy to get caught up in calling the plays and deal with the big picture stuff. So I kind of hope he doesn't call plays. It's not against him. It's just my you know, 2 cents on my philosophy on head coaches. But I guess as it stands, it looks like Kellen Moore's sticking around and might be calling him. It's my understanding. Is that where we're at, right?
As I understand it, and we had Will McClay on ESPN San Antonio this past week, and he, you know, confirmed essentially that Kellen's back, and the play calling, I think, is still kind of up in the air,
but
Kellen is back, which is what matters most.
No, I agree with that, and so that was one of my concerns. I wanted to keep Chris Richard. I was really hoping that would happen, because I think he's got a future as a head coach as well. But Kellen Moore, I mean, I have no idea what's going to happen. I have no inside information, but my gut is McCarthy's going to end up calling the plays and sort of feeling out Kellen Moore this year, and then maybe hand it over next year or sometime in the future. But, you know, I like the hire. I think it's a good move. I think he fits the Cowboys, and I think he's going to end up having a spot in Cowboys history that matters.
Oh, right on. Very last two quick things for you, Chris. First, I like the release of All or Nothing in February. I'm excited for that. I don't know who made that decision, but I'm very excited. Not looking forward to watching the Eagles win over the Cowboys. Did you produce any of this or work on it at all?
No, I haven't worked on it the last couple of years, because I was wrapped up with the Peyton Manning, with Peyton's Places, and this year I was wrapped up with the grind. But I know those guys worked extremely hard to get that done for a drop in February, and so they've been working their butts off to get it done, and I'm certain it's going to be a good show.
Well, it will be painful, no doubt. For
Cowboys. No doubt about it.
Last thing, can you give us any preview, any tease on any Cowboys or really just films you're excited about in general with the whole NFL that will be coming out this spring, potentially in relation to the Centennial class? I'm sure you guys have had a bunch of meetings and stuff already.
Well, it's funny. I can't do a great look ahead for you this time. I've been so caught up in finishing the other shows I've been on, like I said, with Peyton's and The Grind. You know, I do know The Grind is coming back next season. We did a two-year deal with Epics to bring that back, and that was a lot of fun to work on, and we learned a lot, and the show got better almost every week. So I can. That's a little further than I think you want to look ahead, but and I'm not even 100% sure what I'm going to be working on in the spring. I know that I'm not even sure what I could say about that. Let me put it this way. I hope Peyton's Places comes back for another season. I'm not sure if that'll happen, but I really hope it does.
Well, I lied. I have one more since you brought that up.
No, I got all the, whatever you got.
The Brady episode was incredible. And the bit at Jim Nance's house, I mentioned the Masters earlier. What was that like? I mean, I just, because I don't know what element of that is. I don't know how to rank them. I mean, you've got Peyton and Brady and Jim Nance's house and the famed backyard, and the Romo line was really great. I mean, what can you tell us about that?
Well, that's one that I really, really wanted to do, but unfortunately, I didn't get to direct that one. That's one that Matt Dissinger directed, who's another great director here. And I didn't do the shoot per se. I was part of the pre-production, the planning, and had to help plan that out. And then the longer story is, we shot the episode with Peyton and his dad in New Orleans like 5 days after the Brady one, and so I was knee deep in New Orleans and Archie and the family. So I was dealing with that one. Didn't get to direct the shoot with Brady, which was a disappointment, but you can't do them all. But I did do the shoot with Nance that's in the credit roll. I directed that. And he was a real pleasure to work with, man. He was a lot of fun, and I got to go see the famous replica half scale par 3 in his backyard, which was a blast. But no, I that's one that I watch as a fan of the show. I mean, it's really good. Seeing those two guys together is priceless, and it's one of my favorites as well. And you know, not to veer off too far, but the most recent one that just came out is the Elvis episode, which that one I did direct, and it's one of my favorite days of shooting I've ever done, and I've done a lot of fun ones, but the Elvis episode is one of my favorites. So if you haven't seen that one yet, RJ, check that out. That was a heck of a good time down at Graceland.
Where does Peyton's Places rank for you in terms of projects you've worked on? I have to imagine very near the top. I mean, it's such a unique thing and a unique person to work with.
I'd say it's probably the one I'm most proud of, because it was very hard. It was a lot of work and it was very hard, but it was, again, a lot of fun. I mean, the amount of cooperation and the level of performance, or whatever you want to call it, that we got out of the people with Peyton was incredible. Everybody wants to work with Peyton Manning. Mm-hmm. And so he brings out the best in everybody, not just the subjects that he's talking to, but also the best. He brings out the best in us, NFL Films, as individually. Like, I think he made me better, and I think he made our company better. So I think it's probably the one I'm most proud of in terms of the amount of work and the effort it took, and then the results that we got, which I think it's a really good show that almost anybody can watch and enjoy. So yeah, if it's not, you know, ranking, I love ranking things. It's hard to rank. It's like ranking your kids a little bit, but that's probably the one I'm most proud of, you know, until the next thing. That's what I always say. I'm always the thing that's next is what I always look forward to the most.
Well, right on, Chris. We all enjoyed it. It was fantastic. I promise, the last one. What non-football things are you planning on watching this spring? You mentioned The Crown, I guess, and Peaky Blinders. My wife watches those. I've never gotten into them myself. But
I could talk about this all day. Yeah, yeah.
What do you got? Give me like five things.
The Crown, I've been telling people The Crown, I think, is, especially the first season, is the best looking show I've ever seen in terms of it, when you sum up the shoot, you know, the cinematography, the sets, the locations, and the wardrobe and everything. When you add it all up, I don't think there's a better looking show than that. And that show has a massive budget. I want to say it had like the biggest budget for any show ever. It was like one of those kind of deals. But you know, the stuff they shoot in Buckingham Palace is incredible. But that's one of the best looking shows I've ever seen, and I really like it. The third season, I'm almost through it now. It's gotten a little more soap opera ish, and they've taken a new direction that I won't spoil for anybody. But it's not quite as good as it was. Now, Peaky Blinders, I'm all caught up on that, and that's probably my, if I had to pick my favorite show over the last few years, I would say that's it. But again, a lot of that has to do with the cinematography. You know, I say The Crown is the best looking show when you add all that up. Well, there's no show that's shot better than Peaky Blinders, especially when it comes to lighting. Their use of lighting in that show is absolutely incredible. Like, they do a lot of candlelight, natural light, like fireside stuff. So it's but the story is great. I don't want to, you know, it's not just about how it looks. It's a brilliantly written and executed show. So Peaky, The Crown, I'm starting back up on Man in the High Castle on Amazon, but I'm sort of losing faith in that one a little bit too. you got me on the spot because I love talking about these things. This is what we talk about at films when we're not talking about football.
About,
we talk about our favorite shows and
movies.
You know?
Give me movies then. The Oscars are coming up and stuff. What do you got?
Well, that's funny. It's funny you say that because I don't see that many movies anymore. Most of my watching hours are spent on shows, especially because I travel quite a bit and I love watching shows on planes. And so I haven't seen a lot of movies lately. I'm trying to think of what the last like theatrically released film is that I've seen, and I can't even remember what it was. So unfortunately, I can't give you a lot there. But yeah, if you haven't seen Peaky and you haven't seen Crown, big fan of those. And there's something else I'm thinking. Oh, my wife loves the marvelous Mrs. Maisel on Amazon, which I like. That's another one that I like to watch for the execution. Like, they have these extremely long one take scenes that are so choreographed. It makes me want to go watch them shoot it, because they'll have like a 4 minute single shot scene with people dancing around, and like the timing on those things is just, I can't even fathom it. You know, like, we do what I think is difficult, and then I see that and I go, well, we're not even in the realm of what they're doing. So that's a really well produced show, Marvelous Mrs. Maisel's, and I have a sort of a soft spot for Lenny Bruce, and he's got a character in there. So that's another one that we've been watching too.
You mentioned that you watch like All or Nothing, like on City or Michigan, a little differently than most people. Do you watch shows like that differently? I mean, because you're talking about the lighting, like I mean, that kind of stuff goes over my head personally. You've helped me experience sort of an awakening on this kind of stuff. But do you watch that differently than you think the average person, maybe your wife?
Well, I think so. You know, I can't speak for how other people do, but I do know that when I mention something to my wife, like I'll say that to my wife when we're watching Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, I'll say, you know, that's the same, they're still on the same shot that they started with when they got off that airplane or whatever it is. So I think, and she'll say, oh yeah, you know, so I think I do. And some of it's just learning, you know, like I'm absorbing and I'm trying to figure out what I like and what I don't like and what I can do better or differently. And like, I'll give you a specific example. Like we for the last show I worked on, The Grind, we did a lot of shoots, like interviews in cars, and we were trying to come up with new and cooler looking ways to do that. And so like The Crown, there's several scenes where they'll have somebody riding in a car, and I'm like sort of taking mental notes about what I like about how they did it, what I didn't like, and
that's awesome.
How we can apply that stuff. And that's what our shooters do here, our cinematographers. You know, they want everything to look like a movie, and you know, we want it cinematic too. So that's where I learn more from those shows, I'd say, even than I do the sports content that I take in.
To kind of take us back to where we started, I feel like, you could correct me if I'm wrong, that was maybe Steve Sable's part of his vision was to have football movies feel and look and ultimately be digested that way, like other movies.
No, absolutely. That was the goal. It was like he wanted it to be cinematic, and he wanted it to look like a movie and not like the broadcast. And look, that's still a goal of ours. You know, everybody sees the games. We need it to look different than the broadcast. So that's a goal. And I tell people all the time, my goal, I mean, depends on what show you're working on, but by and large, my goal is the thing that makes us different, or should make us different, is it's got to be cinematic. That's the word I use more than anything else around here, is it's got to be cinematic. That's the difference between us and the broadcast. The broadcast is, you know, you're seeing it unfold for the first time in real time, which is invaluable, but being able to capture it and then show it to an audience again in a cinematic fashion is what made us what we are. And it's what makes us made us what we are then and now, is what I'm trying to say.
Well, that's awesome. Chris, you're going to be in Miami for the Super Bowl? I imagine so.
It looks like we're not taking The Grind there this year. I just got asked about maybe doing another show, so I think there's a tiny chance I'll be there, but as of this minute, I'm not going to be there, which is, I love going. I went last year, and I think I go about every other year, it seems like now, and I love going. It's a great place. It's a neat atmosphere, especially when you can go for a couple days and absorb it, but I still love watching the Super Bowl at home on my couch, you know, eating wings and like a fan. So not going to be there this year, it looks like, but I'll certainly enjoy the game.
Well, we'll have to get you back on. We're going to do a non-football episode at some point this spring and talk. I've never watched The Crown, so I'm going to do like a deep dive, and then we'll get into it, and you can teach me about different elements and things that I'm not noticing as a caveman, and you know, we can go at it that way.
Well, check out Peaky Blinders too. Might have to give it a couple episodes, but it's a great one, man. Don't miss that one.
I won't, Chris. Thanks so much. Congratulations again to all of NFL Films on Steve Sable getting into the Hall of Fame. Thanks for taking the time. Looking forward to doing it again soon.
RJ, always a pleasure, man. Thanks for having me on.
Very awesome to hear all of that. A huge, huge, huge thank you to Chris Weaver on Twitter at WeaverNFLF. I always love hearing about NFL films. Always a great thrill for me. Hopefully it is for you as well. I went and put The Crown and Peaky Blinders, as I've heard my wife has watched that show. I've never seen it. You know, I've never seen either of those, so I'm very excited to get into it. But I'm very excited to see what NFL Films puts together for the Centennial Class and everything that we're going to get. So very, very, very cool indeed. Big thank you to Chris. Hopefully this was a good episode to send you into the weekend. I know we had teased a special another guest coming in. You know, we're working on things, getting ready. I already mentioned that I'm going to be at the Super Bowl on Radio Row with SB Nation, and we're going to have a lot of guests coming in, so might have to kind of push it back to there, so don't worry, but we will have an episode again. No worries. We got episodes coming all the time for the rest of the offseason here. There is no offseason for Blogging the Boys. Make sure to check out bloggingtheboys.com. You're home for the best Dallas Cowboys coverage on the internet. Follow me on Twitter and IG, Insta, the Gram, whatever you want to call it, at RJ Ochoa. Follow Blogging the Boys on Twitter at Blogging the Boys, on the Gram, blogging.the.boys. Also, make sure you have the absolute best Friday of all time. You know why? Because you deserve it. We will see you manana, my friends. As always, go Cowboys and peace out.